For those of you who do catch up online with this class, and if you access it through Torah Media Atlanta, you should be aware that Yisrael Killian, who runs Torah Media Atlanta, reached out because donations to that site are down. Those of you who do take advantage of it, I would suggest making a donation online when you do use it so that he can continue that site. Okay, last week we spoke about a lot about how to speak, how to talk to our children, how to create an environment in our home that's the type of environment that we want to have. Let me begin tonight with a brief story. I think I actually shared the story the last time I did this. I don't know how long ago it was, but I'll start it anyway because I think it really summarizes what it is that I want to accomplish. Imagine you're on an airplane and you are flying wherever it is that you're flying to. In the middle of a flight, here over the intercom, Captain Jones speaking. Just wanted to let you know, I apologize about the inconvenience, he says to you, but there's this red flashing light here in the cockpit, and we're not really positive what exactly it means. We're sure it's not being checked out everything, but everything that we're doing, everything seems to be working fine, we just can't get this light to turn off. So, because safety is our primary concern, and we want to make sure that everything is okay, we're just going to land the plane at the nearest airport, check it out, and we'll be back on in the air as soon as we can. We expect it to be an hour to delay. We really apologize, but safety is our primary concern. End of message. What's your reaction? Really?
I'd be annoyed, but I wouldn't be panicked.
That's what I would say. I'd be annoyed, but not panicked. Because he's not panicked. He told me to check out everything. Everything looks okay. He's going to make a landing to make sure he wants to be concerned. It's going to take an hour to two extra. Annoyed. Appreciate their taking the extra time. And we'll take care of it.
That's if there's children on a plane.
Well, then you're really annoyed.
Right.
Okay, right. Now, it wasn't a matter of, like, we're going to die. It was a matter of, like, what am I going to do with my kid? If you're traveling by yourself, like, this is amazing. An extra 2 hours.
Yeah, I think
if instead of that, scenario over the intercom here, Mr. Captain, there's a light going on. We don't know what the world it means. We're going to land at the nearest airport. We hope it's okay. Prepare for crash landing. So your reaction to that would be totally different. Total panic and chaos would break out in the airplane. You wouldn't hear people like putting down their books and like, oh, man. You would hear total pandemonium would break out. Because you're the captain. When you're captaining, that's the right word, this flight, you're in charge. When you're panicked, I'm panicked. If you're calm and you tell me that everything is fine, I'll be okay. And the captain sets the tone for how we're going to respond to that. We are literally captains of our home. We are in charge. When we as parents get freaked out, and we get panicked, and we don't know how the world we're going to handle the situation, and we convey that to our children, that I have no idea how I'm going to handle the situation, you're driving me crazy, and I don't know what to do, and we basically hand over total control of the home to our children, and we say, I don't know what to do. I don't know how to handle this. When that's the message we convey, we don't use those words. So then, just like we would be in that airplane totally panicked because the one who's flying the plane doesn't know what he's doing, what are we supposed to do back here? So our children have that same, without being as sophisticated in their understanding of it, that same response. The person who's in charge doesn't know what they're doing. And when the person in charge doesn't know what they're doing, there's a lack of stability. There's no structure. I don't know what's going to happen next. And therefore, one of the key components in our ability to do anything as parents is to have calm and control. That's our goal. What I love about what we're going to be discussing tonight, love and logic, as an approach is, I know how I'm going to handle every situation. I don't know that I'm going to teach my child what I want to teach them. Maybe I will, maybe I won't. But when you love a lot, they have an agenda. They believe that it will raise responsible. So this is great. Maybe it will, maybe it won't. But what I do know is, you throw anything at me in the supermarket, in the home, at the child's table, at the playground, I have an approach. I'm going to work it through, get comfortable. What you throw at me, I'm ready for it. So that I will deal with it calmly, in control. I'm not afraid or panicked by anything my child does. I know how to handle it. I might not know how I'm going to handle this particular situation, but I'm going to have the tools to be able to pause the situation, deal with it, deal with it later, deal with it now. I know what I'm going to be saying, and therefore I can be calm. And when a parent is calm, when a parent can give, I'm the pilot, I have this under control. Don't worry about it. The whole house. Parent is uneasy, parent is out of control, the whole house is out of control. So that is one of the things, that's one of the goals that we will have. As I mentioned, that's what I find a tool of level. Again, I'm not a purist. I'll try to point out the areas where I disagree or don't parent with level logic as a purist would. If you are a fan of this, you can buy the books and listen to lectures online. There are plenty. Actual level logic, there's a preschool director in Dallas, Texas, Becky Udman, who's a big fan of this. There's many lectures online. I don't know if they're online, by her series for... When I started doing this, they were tapes, so probably an MP3. But when you're listening to it, she's still talking about, like, and you can, oh, it's just coming, it's only funny when you listen to the whole thing. But the principles are the same, regardless of what decade it was actually discussed. But I'm not a purist, but it's a tool in your box that when the time comes, in order to be able to maintain that sense that I have this under control, and we'll be able to do so. Okay, let's get into this a bit. What is it that we want from our kids? What is it that we really want? So we can ask that question, we can spend time going around the room. We're not going to do any of that. One of the things that everybody would agree that we want, that we can put other answers here as well, we want our children to be independent and to make wise choices. What do we want? Whatever your particular goals for them are, fine. But we want them to be independent. We want our children to grow up and leave our home and start their own as independent families. We want them to make wise decisions. We don't want them, when they're in high school, some of their buddies are doing things that they shouldn't be doing, to be thinking, oh, if I do this, my mom is going to kill me. Because if that's what they're thinking, then what kind of children are we raising? They're going to raise sneaky children who do things that mom doesn't find out about. Because their only thought process is, that's not a child who's going to make wise decisions. Yes.
Isn't there a little bit of a contradiction between independence and wise choices?
Yeah.
Because, you know, what we view as a wise choice may not be what, you know, our child is.
Okay.
How independent can they be?
Yeah, wise choices meaning between healthy and unhealthy, safe and unsafe decisions growing up. In other words, do you mean like I would think a wise choice is making up an example?
Well, wise choice is going to college.
Right, so in other words, 100%. In other words, if let's say there's the parents want the child to go to university, but not to college, and the child wants to go to college. I'm not talking about, in other words, a wise choice is hanging out with the kids who are smoking and doing drugs or not. Being responsible to get a job in terms of being on time for an interview, or thinking, I could show up 15 minutes late and it's not going to make a difference. Meaning those types of making wise decisions in terms of what they want to do with their life, you're right, they'll be independent, and whatever it is that we want from them, they'll do something different, just like we all did things that are different than what our parents wanted for us, because that's what it means. So we want to give them the tools to make wise, healthy decisions, even though those decisions will most likely be different. In that sense, it's different, but we want them, we want to raise children that we're not worried that they're going to do something that's going to endanger their health or well-being, even though they might still get worried because we want them to go to college or don't want them, whichever one we want, that they're going to do something different. And you're always worried about that. This class is not going to stop you worrying about that. It's only going to help hopefully address that other issue. But that's a fair point in that perspective. So how do we raise those children? How do we get them to feel that they're not living their life because I just don't want my mom to find out about this, and that'll kill me? How do we get them to be that? So what we're going to talk about is first removing the five most ineffective, even though they might be the most prevalent parenting techniques that we come up with on our own. Now we're going to start with these, and it's worth actually discussing these so that when you hear, I'm going to try to do it in a way that's kind of silly and pokes fun at it, so that when you see yourself doing this, you'll be like, oh yeah, this doesn't work. And it's worth,
you say that because it feels like, you know, the Muppet Show, there's always
Yes, it's totally fine. Okay, number one, threats. One of the most ineffective tools that we have in our box is we use threats. Now, there are different types of threats, and they're all equally ineffective. Generally, they often start with something along the lines of if. If you don't stop fighting back there as you're driving to wherever you're driving, I'm just pulling over and you're going to walk home. That's a classic threat that you use. Because what's your child thinking when you say that? Right. That's ridiculous. And then you're going to try to prove them right. You have to pull over, and you're still thinking, you're not going to do it. They know that. So some of the threats we say are actually completely unrealistic, and they just say, as soon as they leave their mouth, they're like, that's the story. Now, we often do that. Totally ineffective. Sometimes our threats are not just that they're impossible. You say, you've got to take kids to the race game, and they're fighting over the win, and say, if you don't stop fighting, we are never going to the race game again. Now, your child might be thinking, maybe not. What they might up the engine, they'll say, I don't care. Oh no. Now what? What happens if they say, I don't like baseball? Baseball's stupid. And when you just, well, okay, now I'm going to pull up something else because I think said that we're never going to go again. I'm sure you're going to want to go. I'm never going to take it to another birthday party. Whatever you say, they will guarantee come right back and say, what? Well, so that's not going to be very effective. Another reason why our threats are ineffective is because we sometimes get into these ridiculous dialogues. If you ever hear yourself doing this, you're in trouble. The child is sitting at the table, and you say, okay, playing with your food? If you don't stop playing with your food, I'm taking it away. That's a good threat, right? I started with an if. If you don't do this, if you don't stop, I'm taking it away. What does the child say to that? No. Or sometimes we'll go back to the other one. You might say yes. Or they'll say, okay, I'll stop. That's okay. Are you sure you're going to stop? I'll stop. Okay, then you look back 2 seconds later, and then there's another friend. I told you, if you don't stop playing with your food, I'm going to take it. I'll stop. If you catch yourself in this cycle, you've lost. You are losing the battle. You'll hopefully leave tonight without ever starting a sentence with it. If you... It's totally ineffective because your children will find a way out. They'll either say, I don't care, or they'll take you up on it, or you end up with a threat that you can't possibly keep. Warning. Another very ineffective parenting tool. This sounds different forms of warning. When you start playing with your cell phone and you're trying to need it back, I'm getting my phone back, and they're still playing, they're not paying attention. I'm warning you, I need it back. And then it's usually followed with one, two. Now, if you have a real fear factor in your home, your child might come running. But generally, they're so busy distracted, or they don't even do anything. So then what do? Once you get to two and a half, and then you start giving yourself a math lesson. 2 3/4, 2 7/8.
You think they would notice by the time they get to 3.
Anyway, but then they've done it. And then you go, 3! And what happens is you begin talking in a much more fear-inducing language because clearly the threat of not... But maybe if I yell loud or if I'm really scary in the way that I talk, then it will work. If you hear yourself giving warnings in your home, generally very ineffective. Lecture, another ineffective. You give lots of lectures. Sometimes they're like moral lessons. Like you're sitting, a child's not eating. Like, do you know that there are children in Africa who are starving right now? Or we give a Marxist along the lines of, do you know how hard I work to be able to prepare this meal? Mommy works really hard at night. And yet I came home and I prepared this delicious meal because you say that you like this, and now you're not... What's your child be acting to a lecture like that, generally? What are we doing? My favorite lecture, my favorite lecture, and I have to say this stuff, because this is my favorite child who pulverizes another kid. This is a horrible feeling, and now what am I going to do? My child, my little 3-4-year-old delicious child, just literally hit another child, and like, everyone is like looking at me, like, what are you going to do? Like, everybody saw it in front of all these parents. So, sweetheart. Remember how we spoke about hitting other children? Remember how you didn't like it when somebody did that to you? And you gave a full speech to your sweetheart child. You know, the other kid's crying on the floor. You're sitting there just trying to talk sense to your 4-year-old. And your 4-year-old's looking at you thinking, what are you doing? As are all the other parents wondering. That nothing is going to be accomplished with that beautiful lecture delivered on your knees to your child. You have just done something that you're embarrassed that they've done. It's not very effective as a form of a lecture because we wouldn't get into that so effectively either. Anger. Do you ever notice yourself angry? Parents get angry. Yes, parents get angry. And we can study show Yeah, we are still people even after we have children, which means that we sometimes get angry. When you are angry, you are ineffective. Period. 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 Do not say anything. Do not do anything. Do not try to parent. You are angry. Have you ever had the feeling that you're ready to throw your child against the wall? Because you are angry. You are overtired. You are overworked. This is what you do. It's a classic step. Ready? You go in the same room. Pivot. Pivot. Walk. Away. Then you do that. Go. Pivot. Walk. Away. You saw your account is done first. First. Had a few drinks. We'll talk about that investment that we were discussing last week. The account's drunk. Not the right. So we are emotionally drunk. Not the right. If you sense and feel anger, if you see your spouse angry, hit it, walk. Pivot and walk. You have to remove yourself because you will accomplish nothing productive if you're angry. And if you feel that you never get angry as a parent, I don't believe it. A bribe. Bribes are a real great way to get things to do things. The problem with bribes is they work. That's the problem with bribes. You know, the other four, they really don't work. Threats and warnings and lectures, they don't work at all. Bribes might be the worst parenting technique because it does work. And then what happens? Now you've got this child who knows that whenever you want them to do something, something's coming their way. And whatever it was today, it's going to be better tomorrow, better the next day, and before you know it, your little four-year-old was asking for her driver's license at 11. And already getting you to sign on the dotted line that when she turns 15 already, it depends on it. They're ineffective techniques. We all do these regularly. It happens. We fall back to these things because we lack something else, which is what let's discuss a little bit. So the concept of love logic is to remove all of those things. You can never find yourself threatening, warning, parenting out of the anger of Russia. Yes? So I want, and that's another, the problem is that it works. And in other words,
no, but it works. You hold the sma, and then it'll become the sma.
Yeah, so in other words, so the Gemara says if you want to do Torah and mitzvahs, then you'll eventually get lishma. If you want to take a bath at night, the Gemara doesn't say that because you took a bath and you got a lollipop tonight, tomorrow you do because you like it. So, that's my experience. Maybe I haven't done it long enough, but what it leads to is a child who's going to think, if you want me to do anything, pass. So it's the wrong relationship that we want to be creating, because we don't, I'm not pay off, it's your job, you're part of this family, you're going to have responsibilities, you're going to have chores, and it's not going to pay you, it's because this is what it is that you need to do. So the concept of love and logic, and again, I'm not an official love and logic, a tool that I have gotten from them is as follows. Love your children enough to let them make mistakes, and allow the logic of their decisions, meaning their natural consequences, to be decisions. Let them make mistakes. We as parents have this habit of over-parenting, of protecting our children from ever making a mistake and suffering the consequence of that mistake. Let them learn. There's a book, Blessing of Skinny, all about this concept. It's out there. We still over-parent. It's our job to make sure that nothing bad ever happens to our little topsoil. We can't protect them. Not only is it that we can't protect them, it's not good for them for us to protect them. Because the stakes are low when they're younger, and the stakes get higher as they grow older. The child who forgets their paper at school in third grade, or the book report in fourth grade, whatever it may be, and they forget it at home, and you see it on a dining room table, and you don't say anything. Or they call, you didn't see it, and they call you and they say, but now my book report, I need to bring it right now! And you're in the middle of something. Or you're not. But you know what? I'm not doing anything. That child will learn something far more valuable than fourth grade that will cost them nothing in life than if they learned that in high school, college, or on their first job interview. Well, I forgot my resume. I meant to bring it. and called your mom. Not going to work. But there are actually adults who go through life and, right, you can tell, right, they happen. Those are the parents, when they forget their resume on a job interview, who had a mother who brought them their book report in fourth grade. And when they forgot their baseball glove in sixth grade, they brought it to them too. And when they forgot their lunch, guess who's there, showing up in school every other day. Because the child never had the opportunity to learn through it, through their own responsibility. I, personally, I won't say never, almost never, forget double and triple check that I have our little easy pass before we take our trip up to New York. We don't need our easy pass on here itself, it goes in a drawer. But before we leave, double check, triple check, make sure that it's in the car. Because one time, I left without it and spent an extra 6 cumulative hours over the course of our New York trip waiting on lines at tolls because I didn't have my easy pass. Make that mistake once, and then you learn. So children understand. If they made a mistake, let the consequence teach them. The price is so small when they're children, the lesson's so great. And it's our job to allow them, to love them enough to make that mistake and allow their consequences to actually do the teaching. Simple example again, driving down my block. This is a made-up story, never happened to me, never possibly happened. The speed limit on my block is 25 miles per hour. It's normal of residential in Atlanta. But my block is nice and wide, there's no speed bumps. So sometimes there are some drivers who like to drive down my street and a little bit faster. And they end up going 40 to 45. So imagine such a scenario with theoretically speaking out such a difference, of course, if not. And driving 45 miles per hour, my wife says to me, you know, it's really not right to do that because there are a lot of children that have moved on to the block recently. There are kids playing in the street. It's not safe. Against the law, you really need to drive slower. She's giving a beautiful lecture as to what it is that I should be doing. My response to that will be, most likely, what do I get out of it? Maybe a little bit. A long-lasting impact? Highly unlikely that will change my behavior. What's the one thing that will change my behavior? Yeah. A ticket. I get a ticket. That's going to be the one. You get a ticket, and all of a sudden, I'll be going 25, because I don't even need to get the ticket. I really just need to see the cop parked on the street once or twice, and that will already do it for me. But let's say I actually get a ticket. I get a ticket. Now, I just told me, she warned me, she told me it was illegal, she told me it was costing money, she told me it was dangerous, it was not safe. I didn't listen. I got my ticket. I come into the house, and what's my reaction most likely going to be? I can't believe the police, they sat out here on our block, they were waiting here, a bunch of them, and nothing better to do than stop people on Fillmore Drive. I come in like that. Let's just say that. What is probably what's the potential reactions that a life can have to me is I come into the house. Now, who's in the wrong here? Me. I come in and I'm angry at the police officer because he's the one who gave me the ticket. So I'm angry at him. So I come in all upset. So what are her possible reactions that she could do right now? Right, her sugar could say, I told you so. Now, what's going to be my reaction to that? We're not going to get it, right? So we don't have to play it out, because it's not going to look pretty. Whatever we do would not be pretty, because I'm in the wrong, and right now I'm deflecting the blame and the lesson that really is mine. I did something wrong, and I'm angry at the person who got me in trouble. But I'm the one who got myself in trouble, but we don't see it that way. It's the police officer's fault that I got the ticket, and I'm angry at him. So I come in, but instead of focusing on me, she says something like, I told you so, or anything along those lines. So I am not focused on what it is that I did. And what we'll learn is the way for a parent to respond when a child gets himself into trouble. So how can I respond to the child that allows the child to see that it's their issue and not someone else's? That is our key thing that we want to do, is hand all of the problems that our children have in life, hand them back to them. Make it the child's right. I'm not going to swoop in and save you. I'm not going to take care of the situation for you. I'll be with the parents. I'll have that role. Your problem, you did something, you're going to either pay the price, suffer the consequence, or figure out how to deal with it so that you learn without me taking care of those things. Those are a bunch of practical examples of how this is going to work. Number one, yeah.
So I get that. The question is, how do you balance the, like, if you're at a party or whatever, and your kid does something in someone else's house.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you balance the wanting to let the kid learn from it with the element of being a person who's responsible for it when it affects other people?
Okay, good. Well, let's get through a bit. We'll do some specific examples. Let's try to figure that out. Hold on to that class. Going to three. Children. And here's another major point. Children aren't scientists. They are. They are natural explorers. They want to know everything about the world around them. And that's good. The healthy thing that children experiment and explore with everything. They wouldn't learn anything if they didn't. And we as parents want to encourage that and continuously allow them to explore. One of the ways that they're going to explore is by testing the limits. It's what children, we do it as adults. Why did I know that I could drive 40? And when you're on the highway, how fast do you figure, how fast do you go? And I have a speed limit 65. How fast do you go? Why 7?
I don't know. That's
why
I'm told.
Why? Correct. Because the limit's 65. Why would I drive 72? Isn't the limit 65? Aren't I allowed to buy 75? Of course I am. Why am I driving 72? Because the speed limit's 65. Because, everybody knows, the real limit to 65, no cop is going to take the time to stop me at 72, because the radar guns, you always have this, there's a couple of miles per hour that I could always argue that it was an accident, and it's a 5 mile, I'm safe at 72. What have I really done as an adult? We do this all the time without paying attention. What have I done? I pushed the limit against what the law is to figure out, I'm not going to get caught, no one's going to stop me at 72. So I'm safe here because there's no consequence. 75, 76, 77, depending on where you are. Now you're already playing with whatever the local things are. But why did I choose the number that I choose? I will go as far as I can. What time do you show up at the office? What time do you show up in your office every morning? Usually it's exactly to the minute at the point that you know you won't get in trouble for it. None of you, I'm sure, but I have to, this is where I can get away with without any consequence, and I'll push that limit because that's, I can, and that's what we do, and we live our life always testing, feeling, what can I do, what can't I do, when I see that I can't, I don't, and if I can, I will. That's simply, it's just, we as adults, our children are doing this all the time, and they're learning about the world around them. We are teaching them how the world around them works. So that if there are no consequences to something, they think that's normal. They're not being manipulative necessarily. Some of our children are, but most aren't. That's how the world works. Dad says, bring me that, and nothing happens, so then I guess I don't have to. Because that's just, I'm learning how the world works. Constantly testing limits, and it is a good thing. The greatest gift we can give them is security. We give them a sense that when we say something, we mean it. Because if we don't, we take away the one thing that they need, which is a world that they understand how it goes. And I've used this example before, slot machines. The greatest crime we can do to our children is being a slot machine parent. It's a crime. Punishable, is there should be jail. Because we're literally taking kids and put the slot machine. Why are slot machines so successful in all the casinos? Pretty simple game, right? All you do is pull a lever, and watch what happens, and you win or you lose. There's no skill involved. Why does it work? And the answer to that is because they're rigged to give out prizes. There's no, if a slot machine bell never went off, if you were just in a casino and you watched the slot machine and no bell ever went off, would you play that game? That's a total waste of money. But what happens when you're there? Out of the 40, 50 machines there, like every 5 minutes, bell goes off over there, bell goes off over here, blah, blah, blah. They're all rigged to eventually win. So you put your machine, your quarter, your dollar, whatever it is, you play the machine, and you didn't win. But what do you know? By definition, I'm one turn closer to when it's going to win. And do it again. Now I've played 5 times already. You say, okay, now here's my decision. I've wasted $5. $5 is reasonable, but I must be pretty close at this point. Should be pretty close. If you want more, I should cover. Well, it'd be a waste if I put in $5 and the next guy comes and wins on a single dollar. That's silly. I'll do another one, and I don't win. And eventually you hit a point where you say, this is silly. I'm for sure, I'm there. It has to be that I'm right there at the end. And so you keep going and going and going and going, because you know eventually you're going to get it. A slot machine parent is a parent who gives in to a child's whining. you ever say, okay, fine, those words, okay, fine, ever exit your mouth, that means that prior to that moment you had said no, and now you're saying, okay, fine, you wore me down, you win. You should go to jail. Because what you just did is you taught your child an important lesson about the way the world works. Your child is not being manipulative from here on out. For the rest of your life, your child thinks the way the world works is ask and ask and ask. And when you hear the word no and no and no, you're almost there. You're almost there. Just don't stop now, because then your sister's going to ask a minute from now and she's going to get the yes. Because the yes is coming. It's coming, it's there, because we've taught them that it comes.
We need no hope.
With that, we hope. But we don't want hope when you say no to the candy bar or to the ice cream before supper. If you teach them that, okay, fine, you've whined enough, I have taught my child whine and whine and fetch, because it works. I can't tell you how much. Some days I have more patience, it might take you a half hour. Some days I have less patience, it'll take you 5 minutes. Sorry, kid, I have no idea. But keep at it. Because eventually, I'll give in.
Are the three-year-olds
at fetch? You've worn her down.
I've worn her down.
So what this approach will do is avoid that also. This approach will avoid where you shouldn't be asking the same way as when a child asks. But if the answer is no, whatever it is your child's asking for, if you've decided the answer is no, it's no, and it's no for good. It's no. Because if you change your mind, you're creating a monster. You're creating a monster that your preschool teachers are going to kill you for, your teachers in school are going to be annoyed at you, and they're afraid. Yeah.
So, the one
parent
will say no,
no, no, no, no,
and then the kid
will
go to the other parent, and the other parent will know the situation.
Won't know it.
So,
will not know the situation?
Correct, yeah,
okay.
Yeah, sure.
Is
that more communication?
Yeah, so that's always, you know, those kids are good, kids know the rules. Like, well, if dad said no, but mom doesn't know yet, well, there's something always, sometimes you don't know to ask. This is why, like in my house, because we're aware of that problem, there's this game that goes on that happens all the time. A child will ask me something. I'll say, I'm really not sure, I haven't spoken to mommy about it. So they'll go to mommy, and mom will say, I have no idea. So why do you ask the father?
Did already.
Well, are you sure? So, and because we're trying to avoid that issue of, I don't know what's going on. I come into the home whenever time I get home. I have no idea what's going on. I have no idea. And someone comes in, Daddy's home, can I have ice cream? I've learned the hard way. Let me speak to mommy. Because I have no idea what's just happened. No idea how many times they've asked, how many times the answer's been no, they're supposed to clean something up. No idea. So I usually say, yeah, of course. And then I get hit over the head, like, what kind of, what is this? So that's where it's a lot of, and we'll ask, let me ask mommy. And they'll be annoyed at you. But it's worth it to say, in today's day and age, like, how easy it is to communicate. You know, wherever you are, you know, with our cell phone attached to our phone, you could find out pretty easily, what's the story with so-and-so who's asking me five students? Oh, whatever you want. Great. Then you can say yes. Or, oh my goodness, I can't believe 3 hours. Great. Okay, I know that. That's literally happened to me this week. Her iPad has been left in the car this week. She asked me on my way in at 5 o'clock, bring in the iPad. I come in at 5 and I'm holding it. And as I walk in, my studio is having a total meltdown.
I can't believe the iPad.
And my first thought was, oh, I'm holding it right here. I was like, and sure enough, he was not supposed to be on it. And but it's so tempting, like, well, you can't walk into those situations, you have just no idea. But that's a lot of communication. Yeah. Okay, so we're going to be consistent. Here we go. Control. Major things. What can we control? What can we control? By a show of hands, can you control whether or not your child has a temper tantrum? No, you cannot. No matter what you say, yell, scream, you cannot control if your child has a temper tantrum. Can you control if your child takes a bath? So I think not, because maybe my baby, which is 6 months old, I can control whether or not she takes a bath. But once he gets to 2.5, 3, I can't control that, because what it would take for me to control my child taking a bath is running around my house,
Now, when I was a little bit younger, I probably could do that. But I'm already at the point, I am not running around the house after my child, even though I'm not just philosophically approaching, because I will lose that battle at this point. They will LF. You cannot control that. I can't. Because what it takes to physically control the bath, literally to hold the child, who's over two, and put him in the bath, think about that scene. If I were to like stop in and say like, what's going on in here? And say like, I'll give my child a bath. Say, good scene, bad scene. Is this the way we want our house to look or not? Like all that. All that. Child yelling, screaming, flailing around. So really, really you can't. You can't do that. How about if a child brushes his teeth? Can you control that? No, we'd like to, but you can't, because you know what it takes to get a child to brush their teeth and doesn't want to brush their teeth? Anyone ever tried to get a child to brush their teeth and doesn't want to brush their teeth? So, if you have two parents, it's doable, because like, you can hold the child across, and one has the ability to hold their arm open. But I've gotten to the stage in my family life, we don't have two parents available to brush a four-year-old's teeth. It's just, we have other things to do. You can't really control whether that's as much as we would think to. You actually, these things, you cannot. How about if they give you attitude? Anyone teenage girls yet? Can you control how rolls their eyes to the back of their head? No, you can't control that. Eats dinner, no, cleans up, hits a sibling, takes away time. The answer to all these questions are no. Why is it that we can't control these things? For a very simple reason. What's the only thing we can control? Ourselves. Yes, ourselves and our reaction. Now, this seems sort of silly, but as parents, we actually forget this. We actually think that we can control what our children do. We can control how they'll behave, how they'll talk. We can control those things. And time and again, they prove to us, oh, you can. And it's true, we can. And as much as we try, the more we'll try, the more they won't. That's the reality. Fact, we cannot control them. And if we've engaged in a battle of getting a child to do something that we want them to do, and it was more than asking them once or twice, you've lost. And just go back to the anger mode. Pivot. Move away from the situation. You cannot control it. And the more you engage in controlling the child, the more you have lost control of your home. There's a control battle going on, and if there's a battle for control and it's over physical activity, doing something or not doing something, more often than not, not that we will always lose. Always. More often than not, we'll lose because we won't get it done. And if we do get it done, those of you who have actually had the experience of forcing a child to take a bath or brush your teeth, how do you feel afterwards? Good parent? Bad parent? It's the worst. Right? I can't believe I just cried my four-year-old mouth open to brush their teeth. This is not the dream that my wife and I had about having children. That was sitting there like, oh, we're going to do this. You don't go to bed at night thinking like, ah, you know, we're good. We're really good at that because last time we took us 20 minutes and tonight it only took us 15. And we're so good at the parenting thing. It's not the way that we want the house to run. So if you're in a control valve to physically do something, use the law. Whether or not you get it done, which most of the time you won't, they'll always beat us because they have more energy than us, because they've stacked it all. By the time we're dealing with them, we're done, we're tired. They will win, they're never tired. Or if we do win, we've lost. Because we feel pathetic. I can't believe I just had to do that to my child. Now, since we can't control them, the only thing we can control either sometimes where they do certain things, or we can control what are the consequences of their decisions to behave in whatever way they do. You can brush your teeth, that's fine. I'm only calling you to the bathroom twice. I stand here for a minute, that's my time limit. I just say exactly, go through exactly the words. I'm in the bathroom, happy to help you. You don't want to come, no problem. Because something else will be as a direct result of that, but I am not chasing you around the house, period. I will not do it, I will ask you twice, and that is it. Their decisions will therefore impact their behavior, not ours. Meaning, as soon as the child's doing something where we become impacted, i.e. running around the house chasing them, so then they've won. And we are not in control, and they are in control. So I say, simple example, brushing teeth. I've used this one many times in the past. I've been here before. Child doesn't come to brush his teeth. So you ask them a couple, whatever your procedures, we'll talk about the details. Brushing teeth time, nobody comes. Great, we move on to the next procedure in the evening's routine, which is whatever it may be, pajamas, book. Generally, the first time you go through this, when you move on to the next thing, the child does so happily because that means
It's okay, active one. You were supposed to brush your teeth and then read books, and we're going straight to books. This is a windfall day. And you generally be able to move on to the next thing pretty easily. Except what happens is, the next day, when they get their lunch or their snack after school, and usually they get whatever it is they're supposed to like to get in your home, whatever maybe that they enjoy. And let's say it's ice cream, which happens to be my house, and they come home from school, and there's no ice cream. Why is there no ice cream? And it's like, oh, so I like to give you ice cream, but ice cream is a very sugary food, and I'm afraid of cavities for children who don't brush their teeth. So since we had so much trouble brushing their teeth last night, it's not going to be a good idea to have ice cream. I'm so afraid of all the things I want. The cavities are going to be very in a lot of pain and uncomfortable. It's not going to be good for you since we had so much trouble brushing your teeth. What's going to happen right then and there on the spot?
You're
going to brush your teeth. So we're going to go into a bunch of detail. But now we're going to deal with all the fallout and all the options. But that's the basic of that. Like, I'm not fighting you about brushing your teeth because I don't have to. Because I'm the parent in this house, and I actually need control. And I'm going to be calm. I'm going to be a pilot who knows what's going on. I'm not going to panic. I'm not going to lose my cool because you're not brushing your teeth. It's such a force. I haven't really gotten to the details of this question.
The start of the four was my question.
Earlier. Three.
Earlier.
Two.
Well, at what age
so,
do
you
understand
that you
have
to be now? Yeah, so love and logic would tell you by 11 months, for sure. You know, I went up to 18 months, but as soon as your child's old enough to go into your kitchen and say, cookies there, I want, they remember. They know exactly where you keep stuff, they know where things are. By 18 months, for sure, your child's old enough on a basic level, and certainly as they get older. We can give our children much more credit for their mental ability. They know what's going on, and they'll usually be able to predict the test. It does not have to be immediate. It really, really does not need to be immediate. And I think it's very freeing if you think that it doesn't have to be immediate. As we go through some of these, I don't have to come up with it right now on the spot. I'll be able to think. I'll be able to come up with something, and I'll get better at being able to do so. Okay, let's go through some of the more basic steps. Okay, here are the four steps in basically addressing all situations. Number one, in the letter E, the following inside, you set firm and consistent, loving, that's their catchphrase, they like to use, I just borrowed it from them. Basically, let them know what the expectations, what the policies, what the rules are. Child needs to know, you can't, but it's better not to start administering all the consequences for a child that doesn't know what's going on, like what did I do wrong. So let them know, hands are not for hay. That's the policy. And here's the expectation. I don't like it when I'm yelled at. I'm letting you know. I don't like it when I'm yelled at. I don't respond to children. That's my expectation. That's how I handle the situation. I don't like it. We brought the pizza before we book. Dinner is being served now. Classical dinner situation. Let's go down as a great example. Dinner is being served now. You're going to make dinner. All the kids are in the playroom doing whatever they're doing. Dinner. What usually happens in a house when you yell dinner? Nothing. That's what happens. Not in my house. Nothing happens. Nobody comes. Nobody moves the muscle. Now, the truth is, as my boys are getting older, they come. But it wasn't like that for many, many years. But dinner! And it's just risking us sitting in the kitchen all by ourselves. So what we used to do is I'd go back again, and go dinner, and then again, and then again, and then we'd spend 20 minutes trying to get everybody to the table, which is exhausting. Anybody ever tried that one before? And you finally get them there, and then they say something along the lines of, I don't like it as dinner. That's a good stuff. But you know, we'll talk about that also. Okay, dinner on the table. Here's the policy. I'm just letting you know what's going on. Dinner's being served right now. Then what do? You sit down to eat. Kids in the playroom, you inform them, you let them know what's going on. Step one, dinner. Nobody comes. I go back, and I'll say, dinner's being served for another 20 minutes. Now, 6 o'clock, kitchen is open till 6:20. The child doesn't have self-time. Whatever works for the age of the child that you're dealing with. And then you're done. No more stressing. I'm not worried. It's not my job to get my child in. I have announced in this home, supper is being served now. I go down, I sit down, Chrissy, and we have supper. Now, because we're not total pure, at 6:18, we'll sometimes send a reminder, 2 more minutes. If we'd be real pure, we wouldn't need that, but I'm not such a pure. Give them a 2-minute warning that dinner's about to be closed, kitchen's about to be closed. Generally what happens in my home, stampede comes in. Why does the stampede come in? Because they've learned from the last time we did this. The last time we did this, saved Zarda. Nobody came in for dinner. And at 6:20, guess what happened? Kitchen closed. up, put away, dinner is done, and we move on to bath time.
I'm hungry.
Okay, let's go through the list. We'll get to that. That's the next step. So number, so B, so C, set the policy, let them know what's going on. We brush our teeth before we go to bed, we brush our teeth before we're done, whatever that we do. Dinner's being served right now. Homework needs to be done by 7:30. You name it, they know what's going on. Usually that doesn't have to be done because they know it already. Like hitting a child, there are things that turn up. You then you wait for the child to blow it. Now you don't have to wait with a big smile on your face, but you can. And I often do, because I want my child to learn. So I don't mind at all that they're going to blow whatever it is that we're working on right now. I'm actually not hoping. I've been sitting in the car. Okay, we're leaving to school at 8:07, whatever time it is. Oh, I can't believe they made it at 8:06. Because now we didn't really learn anything. But they will eventually blow it. They'll eventually blow it. And when they do, then with great empathy, allow the natural consequence to do the teaching. And empathy is the hard part. To actually feel like you're on their side. Meaning, because if you're hoping that they're going to blow it, sometimes you're like, I don't get it for you. That doesn't work. Try that also. Totally doesn't work. Because as soon as you do that, that's the walking in after getting a ticket, and I say, you know, I can't wait for the police. Look, I've now shifted, but now I've become the bad guy. It's not my problem. I'm the mean parent. As soon as they pick up on that, they're like, I knew it, this is going to work. You're not even going to get it. That. It's really, you're on their side. Like, oh. And this is hard to do originally. Women are generally better than this than men, but we pick up on it all eventually. Like, with real empathy, like, I'm so sorry. I know you were hungry. That's why I called you. Sorry, dinner's closed. And keep it short. No long speeches of like, remember I told you 2 minutes ago, then you can make it 5 minutes, okay. Stay away from that. Just clear, like the action, children don't speak a language. Meaning they don't learn from speech. Neither do we, by the way. We don't learn speeches either. But I guess kids do different talks. I do. So you don't learn from speech. You learn from experience. So keep it really short. I'm so sorry. Stuff right the kitchen closer that is.
Oh,
starving! I know. I hate when I get people hungry. I always get that hungry. But I usually try to eat a good breakfast the next day. And just sort of walk away. Do not engage in dialogue. It's over. Because we said we're not going to be slot machine parents. The worst thing you can do, the worst thing, is the first or second time you're trying this, and the kid comes in and says, I'm so hungry! I'm going to die! And you're like, this is happening because you put yourself on the news the next night of a parent who didn't feed their child suffering. It's not going to happen. They'll be fine. They'll really, really, really be fine. If you give in after you told them, kitchen closes at 6:20, this might as well leave now because you're going to get nothing from this. Your kids are going to walk all over. They're going to accomplish nothing because it doesn't mean anything. But they're just going to ask me to freely and they'll do it. Yes.
Okay, so now you've got your 3-year-old left
the
building, like trying to open the
pantry
door and pulling stuff out.
Mm-hmm.
And temperature's
coming
on the floor.
Yeah, that's the next step. We'll get there. 100%. 100%. In other words, it's all worth it because the next night when supper is being served, your kids come. Okay, so now we're at the stage of, with great empathy, you allow the natural consequence. What's the natural consequence of not coming when supper happens? This is an easy one. You're hungry. You don't have to create anything. You don't have to manipulate the situation. No creativity. This is the easiest type of example. Because the natural consequence is right there in front of you. Dinner's on the table. You didn't come. You go hungry. I feel bad. Again, that's a hard time. Let's stress it again. I feel bad for my child. I'm really happy inside. Really, really, really happy inside. But I feel bad for my child. And they have to know that. But I don't want to go to bed hungry either. So sorry. But move on to the next thing of the night, because if you give in, if you let them wear you down, and you give in, this is a healthy snack. That's an apple. That's so good, okay? That, for the most, didn't mean a healthy thing. It's a good man. You can't give him whatever we have for dinner. But they're saying, no, that counts. No. No, no, no. Because then you want to accomplish something. Yeah. Even Brussels sprouts. Even Brussels sprouts. I really think you shouldn't, like, that's a dinner, like, kitchen itself. Yeah?
I totally get this, but I have
a
question in terms of, not kindness, but what about in terms of, at some point you're going to teach your child how to be polite and ask. So what happens when they go and say, so they're like, oh, maybe if I ask them,
right,
they still get stressed out.
100%.
Like,
Thank you for asking so nicely. I'll be happy to give you a big breakfast tomorrow. 100%. Because otherwise, then the structure that we're setting up is totally broken down. And they learn that, again, not being manipulative, they learn that the way the world works is ignore deadlines, ask nicely. Is that a lesson you want to teach your child? Because the world doesn't work that way. If you miss your taxes and you call up the government and you say, really, please, I'm going to ask very nice, you're not going to get any breaks on that. You're going to pay the fine because you missed the deadline. So the asking nicely isn't helpful to them. Yeah, big picture.
What about the top of that in terms of using empathy, for example? In other words, I have a very sensitive child. He will say to me, you broke my heart. And I ignore it and say, I'm so sorry, but this is what's going to happen, whatever it is. But at some point, you also teach yourself, like, my child is not caring for you, but in a relationship with another child, the other child is upset. You want your child to have that feeling of saying, your child is upset, and I want to respond to
her. Good. So let me go back to what I said earlier. I'm glad you bring this back up. The theory is, as what I just said right now, the theory is we're going to teach responsibility and how to, that's all the theory of this whole program. Does it work, does it not work, but it always gives you the lesson you want, maybe yes, maybe no, we can talk about the specific example. What it's done is, what I started with is, I know how I'm handling my home. Because otherwise, I don't know, every day is a challenge. Everything my child throws at me, I don't know what to do. So this is how I'm handling, this is how I react to my child. I set a rule, and I'm going to hold to it. And you say, build this in the end. I'm not worried about that because tomorrow night we're coming for supper. And so, long term, we could philosophically discuss whether or not every example works. What I found, and this is why I put it as a tool in my box, not as a theorist, as I mentioned many times. What this does for me, my home, is allows the home to function calmly because I know what I'm doing, and I'm not worried about this one thing, what's going to happen with, you know, the long-term effect. I know there are a bunch of questions. Let's just go on and do a little bit more, and then we'll go over a bunch of questions. Just for some examples. Kiddush Friday night, classic example. Who here, when they make kiddush on Friday night, would love to have all of their children standing beautifully around the table, full attention, in their Shabbos clothes, tucked in, smiling while Abba makes kiddush? But isn't it a beautiful picture? That's so sweet. Maybe somebody makes a movie one day, they'll be able to create that. But I don't know exactly what that looks like. In my home, so you know, kids are kids. So in my beautiful picture of what we had in the shoe, that was that is so cool and makes kiddush and everybody there, it's beautiful. But it's not necessarily so realistic. But what is realistic is that my children love Reiki. Reiki is one of the classic. It's just sugary, and it's sweet, and it's a Friday night treat, and I know most people don't actually have patience during the week, but kids look forward to Friday night, and they want great. Well, here's a very simple policy in my home. So if you're at the table for kiddush, you get great. Hello? Anybody at the table for kiddush? That's very good. So I say, kiddush, nobody's there, one or two show up, by the time I'm at Boret, three I go off, and I have a table full of children. My fellow said, you mean you start making kiddush like you're holding the table? Yes. Because if I waited to get my children at the table, it would be Tuesday night before I get kiddush. Because I got four, and then, oh no, and I want to, it's like trying to hold it, and it doesn't work. So that's not my problem. I'm not worried. My children like grape juice. I have the natural consequence in front of me. It's very easy for me. You're at the table, you get grape juice. What happens if a child misses kiddush and doesn't get grape juice? So here you have how much of a purist you want to be. Either you have to make no kiddush with some obvious, or you miss it. That's you know, how shocked you want to be with your love and logic technique. But that's it. I'm sorry, which is fine. Because kiddush is an actual mitzvah, so that brings us into other things about we want to train children. That's kiddush. So we sometimes let a child make kiddush on their own, like the whole thing. And you have to say it all. If you're old enough to read the whole thing and you make kiddush, then you can have grape juice. So that looks like our not being a purist, but giving another option. But I'm not worried about getting my children to the table because I thought, and they come, because they don't want to miss the grape juice. Same thing with time for books. Those of you who have younger children and read books to your children before they go to sleep, same thing. If that's something they like, then that's the natural consequence of anything along the way in the dinner bath time brushing teeth procedure. If it takes too long, we read books at, you name the time, whatever the best time is, 10 minutes before that. If it takes more time than that to get you to brush your teeth and to get into pajamas, oh, I'm so sorry, we ran out of time. If your kids don't like reading books with you, then that doesn't work, you find something else. But it's just a matter of finding something that they like on their own, that works as a natural concept. They took too long, therefore we don't have time. Tomorrow night I'm sure we'll have time. It works. I teach this because I have found it is enormously successful. Not every child responds perfectly to it, but as just like I did as a parent, figured out what I can do, what I can't do with which children, it is a very effective way of me maintaining my control. I'm not worried when you don't get into the bath right away because I know you like reading books. And we're not going to be fine. Tomorrow night you're going to be in the bath. Deal with that. Going to remember that. And I don't have to say, remember what happened last night? I'm going to do that. I just need to do the next bath time and then just wait and see what happens. It's a very, the approach is so logical of just allowing the children to learn on their own. Okay. Let's do a few case studies. The one I gave, the title was the four keys to natural consequences. Let's go through what they are. The letter F. So there's a difference between a punishment and a consequence. Punishment is unrelated to whatever it is that they did. You know, a child doesn't take a bath, then you can't wear your favorite pajamas, right? We don't respond to punishment well. It has to be where it flows naturally out of whatever their action was. The consequence flows out of that. So the way that needs to be is, number one, it's enforceable. In order for something to be enforceable means it's up to me to do. I can control whether or not it happens or not, and it's something, or that I can tell them what it is that they can do in order to get it. As opposed to saying, you must. Anytime you say something, you must do this, that, or the other, the you must, which I'm trying to control the behavior, never works. I could always do something wrong. After your bath, you can do this, that, or the other. It's a way to think. After this, that's the consequence. After a bath, you can do this, or... I will be happy to help you with this after something else. For example, kids keep flipping. This is a thought to go ahead and we'll talk about it. I want to make sure I get that in here. He comes and says, pour me orange juice. They say it in a flipping way or in a way that we don't want to show the face. So the wrong thing to do at that point is to take the orange juice and pour them. As you're pouring them, you're going to have to ask what their effect is next time. How effective is that? Zero. I've watched it happen so many times. The parents are trying to be so good in instructing the children what to do while they're fulfilling whatever it was that the child did incorrectly. Okay. Next time you have to ask the parents, okay? Okay, mommy. Sure thing. That's what they're saying. So the response that they say to do is, totally orange juice. The response is, whoa. I only listen to children to speak with their parents. Forcible or non-forcible? I can't make you speak with Zarahat, but I can tell you that I don't listen to children who don't speak with Zarahat. I have a phrase that I've said before, like, well, that's a funny way to ask. That's a catchphrase in our house. Well, that's a funny way to ask. I don't say anything more than that. At a very young age, my 3-year-old knows already. That means you ask in a way that's going to get zero response. Consistently. You ask like that, that's a funny way to ask. Whoa, I don't like the way that sounded. I can't respond to somebody talking to me that way. So what this does is that I'm calm, I can't control how you're going to speak, but I can control you will get nothing from me while you speak that way. That I can control. And that's easy to control. Which brings me to the confession. I came with, I took all the time to get to the confession. What happens if the kids are temper tantrum in the kitchen? Temper tantrum going on in the kitchen. Pretty every day occurs. You have a child, they're going to throw temper tantrum in the kitchen. That's what they do. And that's the best thing. Why do they throw temper tantrum in the kitchen? Correct. That's where you are. Okay, now can we control whether or not the child has a temper tantrum? No. Well, we can control, especially when they're usually the children who throw temper tantrums are small enough where we can still control, where they have the temper tantrum. So, for example, in our house we have a chat room, which many of you have heard from me before. Chat room is any one bedroom, you can put anyone in your house, it doesn't matter, it's just far away from the kitchen. And you say, oh, you can stay in. I only know you can stay in the kitchen as long as there's no question. That's the policy. Not conducive. Kitchens are not conducive. You can be here as long as you're not conducive. I think it doesn't work because they need to dress. But they say no problem. Take them up. Take them to their room. Love touching. And so would you like for me to stay with you while you finish touching, or do you want to touch by yourself? But whenever you're finished touching, you can join us. Now, I always like, there's a difference, in my mind, a difference in time out and what I'm describing. And what I'm describing, I use for many things with smaller children. It's in their control to come out whenever they want. Whenever you want. Whether or not they, same thing, a child hits somebody else. In the immediate reaction when a child hits somebody else. They swoop in, pick the child up, put them in a different room, and say, hands are not for hitting. When you're ready to join us, come back whenever you want. And usually they're back in the room for me. Which, if I have other parents there, they think that they've the child won. So you're in my playroom, and my child hits your parent. I come in, I pick up my child, and they don't see what's right, I put the child away, and then before I get back, the child's back there already. You're sitting on my couch, and you're thinking, thank you, parenting lesson. What did he do? Except I did something very significant. I took the power in the child's hand to say, when you're ready to go back, you can join us at any time. I follow right in, standing there, not super physically, but watching. Because the fourth rule, which I hadn't really gotten to in a second, the fourth rule says, when your consequence has to be in a way that the child has a way to do it again. You know, it's one of the rules of the consequences, you know, you set the limit, set the rule, set the procedure, wait for them to blow it, let the natural consequence take its effect. What's the natural consequence of hitting another child? You can't be here with it. It's not safe for the other children. And you can say, sorry, it's really not safe for other children, for you to be around other children right now. I see that you're having trouble controlling your hands. You'll stay here. When you feel you're ready, come back. Because I want them to have, I don't want them to sit in the room the whole day. Because then what are they doing if they're in the room the whole time?
Hating you.
Yeah. Stewing in their anger over their parents. I don't want that. I want the child to see that it's their issue. That's the way they get put out. Whenever you're ready, you come back. The child will come right back. Almost guaranteed, I've seen it happen with every single one of my children. How do they behave when they come back? They don't hit anymore. Because you're there, they hit, they leave. Where do they want to be? Maybe in the room. If you punish them and keep them in the room until you remember to come back and say to them, are you ready to come out now? They're just angry. They're planning everything that they can do. So put it in their hands. I always, that's how I do it. That's always how I do it. And I'm happy when they come out before me. Same thing with the fetching. I got a 3-year-old throwing a temper tantrum in the kitchen. So you're welcome to stay here if you don't want to fetch. That doesn't work, which I don't expect it to. Pick up the 3-year-old, take it to her room. Whenever you're finished fetching, you can come right back. She will be out of her room before I am. Usually without finished stretching, so that by the time I get back to the kitchen, we're back where we were, usually a little bit less. A little bit less of stretch, because they're touching the limit. Like, how much can I stretch and get away with it? I see we're not ready yet. If you're up, yeah, second time I don't even get to the room. Second time, by the time I'm halfway there, I finished stretching. Really? I was trying to make a joke here. There's no way you could be finished. That was so quick. I'm done. Are you sure? I'm finished. And problem solved. Because it's not, I'm not talking to her in the kitchen, I'm not debating with her, I'm not trying to convince her that it's not worth fetching. They speak the words of reaction. They're learning about how the world works. You talk to them, no warning, no, this is not a place for fetching. No problem. I often go on and say, is that with you? No. Fine. I leave, they come out. I've had children who actually stayed around themselves for 20 minutes, calm themselves down and come out. I told you to come out right away. There's no rule. The only thing that I know is, in my kitchen, there's no touching. And they know that. So that generally works as a rule. Let's take some questions. Yes?
Okay, you've got to sit down in 3-5 in a very short period of time. So every time you brought them, you know, there's no hitting in the air. They come back, bam! The only punishment is they left for 30 seconds and then they can come right back in and hit the kid again.
You're saying that's actually happened?
Children that I have seen
It could happen. It's rare that would happen. If that actually happens, so then the parent would have to obviously say, it couldn't be when you can stop whenever you're ready because you've actually shown me you're not ready. Then the consequence would be, I'm going to have to hold you for 5 minutes, stay with you for 5 minutes, and then ask. In other words, if the idea is, put it in the child's hands. Let the child be in charge of when they're ready to do it. If they prove that they can't, so then you have to go to a longer where, you know, you're going to need more time in order to do that. But that's, in my experience, if you're consistent with responding with actions and not with words, trying to talk to them. I've seen this. I was at Kiddush recently, and a father was holding a small child, 18 to 24 months, somewhere in that area, and the child is not so playfully slapping her father's cheek while we're talking. You're laughing. And he keeps saying to her, "No hitting. No hitting, sweetheart. There are no hitting.
Put her down,
please. Just put her down."
And she goes, "Oh, oh."
He says, "There's no hitting.
Up.
If you want to try again," he picks her up, and she puts her head on her shoulder, and that was the end of the problem. It's so simple, but you can't talk to an 18-month-old and say, "No hitting." It doesn't work. The language you understand is, "Oh, you hit? What's the natural consequence for hitting dad?" Dad doesn't hold you. I put you down. You ready to try again? And I'll go immediately. Are you ready to try again?
Yes.
Great. There doesn't have to be this 5-minute timeout period. It's just, you hit me, I put you down. And immediately I will say, "Do you want to try?" What do you, I had this week, a 3-year-old, they're trying to get in the bath. So my shine is usually pretty good with that. Everyone's around, he's 3 years old. So he doesn't want to take a shower. Yeah, no problem. But he doesn't take a shower, so I'm not fighting with him over the shower. We go straight to the pajama routine. But as I mentioned last week, if he gets into pajamas and doesn't even shower when he's supposed to, then he's got to go sleep in his bed, which he doesn't like. So, "Would you like to try taking a shower again?" "Yeah." Boom, he's gone. So did I win or did I lose that night? I won. We were going to do this routine. He didn't like that routine. So I don't have to fight him and now keep that consequence. Now you're because all that I now do is I shift to the battle. So no, I don't want to have a battle. You would like to try again? Yes, great. So as far as I'm concerned, now again, would I be considered a level of security? I don't know. I don't care. Because this is how the house works. The consequence for not taking a shower is this. I don't mind giving another chance. Want to come back? Great. Yeah. Yeah. I think if you do that at whatever age, if a child's old enough to hit, he's old enough to be taken out.
Unless you have a child.
You have a cousin. I know.
Pit, leave the room, come back, pit, leave the room.
I could choose this guy.
Or then turns to bite and like.
Yeah. It's possibly too young to get it, and then you just need to remove him from the future. In other words, if he's too young to learn that, and just can't be in that situation, it's not fair to put him in that. There's a certain age, again, as I was saying, there's a certain age where they get, like, they want to be in that room. But in a situation like that, so again, this is a tool. It's not foolproof, and it doesn't always work, and everybody needs to find their comfort level in terms of, I want to get a couple of examples to see how exactly it works out. If that really happens, where it's continuous, so then obviously the safety of the other children needs to, remove a theoretical child from the environment. Yeah.
How do you handle when siblings who are properly verbally behaving and
verbally
behaving are in the same situation and then have to face the same consequences because of what's going on? Like, I'm thinking about, earlier I had the twins in the bath together,
yeah.
And one of them was misbehaving, and I can't take her out, leave the other one in the bath.
So that's where the delayed consequence comes in. In other words, I can't do anything right now. There are many times as a parent that happens. Like, I'm home alone, I got the kids, I can't do anything right now. So there's a sort of pointing a blind eye to what's going on immediate. Sometimes it's with words. There's a great technique is if the children are old enough, again, they fairly quickly get older, if you say that, whatever they're doing, I'm sorry that you're behaving that way. We'll talk about later what's going to happen to that. That's like a great one. Uh-oh. And you're like, "I don't know what it is right now. We'll think about it later." As long as it fits, it makes sense as a consequence, which means that it's enforceable, logical, and that it will allow another opportunity in the near future for them to change what it is that they did, you come up with something. And again, it does not always happen right away. Whatever the situation might be, this will also maybe tomorrow night's bath. When your husband's home, you can manage the situation differently. These two kids get, their extra computer time because you're quiet. There's a way to manipulate the situation. For example, this is where sometimes it's a little bit manipulative, but sometimes you have to be a little bit manipulative. Where sometimes you manipulate a situation in which generally you say you don't give out dessert after dinner. on Tuesday night. That's your, generally you don't, not to give a policy in the family, just generally don't. And you have a certain problem, and if a certain child went into the cabinet and snuck a bunch of cookies before dinner. Maybe they cut one chocolate cookie. And they know that's the rule, we don't sneak chocolate cookies. And they did. And they go, then how do I do it? So I can't yell, I can't use anger, I can't slap your friends. What am I supposed to do? What's the consequence of sneaking into the pantry and taking cookies? Right. So what happens is that when everybody else gets dessert after dinner, and it's like, schmuck, let's go to the chocolate chip cookie, and you're like, oh, I'm so you had your dessert already, so you're not going to be able to get it. Next time you have a dessert, you'll be able to. That's the sort of way in which you're manipulating the situation to create a natural consequence that wouldn't otherwise be there, and that's where sometimes the creativity has to come. Like, how do I figure out a scenario in which I can do that? And then so much cows left with only like, yeah, there's only no one to blame. So that's what happened, that's right. And then therefore, and then you know, if you want to have that opportunity next time, but that's sort of where how do I handle taking a cookie? Okay, what I'm looking for is that's what I mean when I say, like, I know what I'm doing. Like, I don't know exactly what I'm doing, but I know what I'm looking to create now is, you just did something you weren't allowed to do. I'm not going to yell, punish. How do I handle it? Well, I need to find something in which it makes sense, because you took a cookie now, that you're not going to, maybe it's not going to be once tomorrow. There's just some very natural response. If you do that, then it's something you're not going to want to have going to happen later.
What about?
Yeah.
They don't need to make dinner, they miss
out. Mm-hmm. Then they
wake up at 5 in the morning, even earlier,
for
breakfast.
Right.
So,
that's what
happens. Ideally,
yes. I mean, unless, but again, even there, also, if you think, like, it's a one-time thing, and you're pretty sure that tomorrow they're going to come for dinner, you don't have to worry about it, so then, in that scenario, in which you're not worried about that 5 o'clock thing that's going to happen regularly, it's only because of what has happened, so I would say, like, be practical about it. Give them breakfast, go back to bed. If there was a regular thing and you were trying to train them to sleep later, that's a different thing. But here, your main issue is, what are you trying to teach in this moment? Dinner time. So breakfast, I'll deal with. Tomorrow night, I'm pretty sure. Now, they would unlikely prefer to have no dinner, wake up at 5 o'clock in the morning. They're not thinking through that, right? They don't want any dinner. That's what I would give them to 5 o'clock in the morning. But I'm not supposed to follow that. Yes.
So, I have a question.
Let's
say you're at the park or somewhere.
Yeah. Right, yes. Classic example.
So the easiest thing to do is fry that.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So what do you do?
Great. So this is where also, great example. Let's talk this through. You're in the park. So the first thing you do, by the way, is what from last week? What's the first thing we're going to do? 5 minutes. We're going 5 minutes. 2 minutes. We're in 2 minutes. Okay, it's time to go. Now, what I have found is extremely good. This is where the confidence as a parent in terms of piloting the ship comes in. I go. And not because I'm threatening to leave them behind, and I never even say that. I simply say, okay, time to go. And I pick up the stuff, and I start walking to the car. Because time to go. And it's with full expectation that my children will follow after me. They don't follow after you. Now, that doesn't, I find it generally works. They don't follow after you when you're waiting for them to make the first move. Like, we need to go. Like, if you approach it with, I'm totally scared about this situation, I'm praying that nobody's watching me because I have no idea how I'm going to get from point A to point B. So, that's when things fall apart, because the children are like shocked. They're like, oh, we got her. She has no idea what she's doing. It's like, it's totally, like, I mean that, I've done this many times with different age children, it's like, it's expected. I told you we're leaving, time to go, no, come on, I'm going now. And then, as you go, they don't want to be left by themselves, and they don't think that you're going to. They do that, they're like, if you don't come now, I'm leaving you here. So that's a great way to make a scene. Oh, she has no idea what she's doing. A great threat. It's time to go, and you go. I generally find they actually leave. Let's say they don't. That's okay. Point A, with confidence, with full expectation for full cooperation, you know, it's time to go. They don't. You know, they don't come. So you go to the car, assuming it's the park where you can see them from where they are, you go to the car, sit in your car for a minute, they don't come. Okay, now you got to go and get there.
Isn't that a dangerous situation, like with parking lot?
So I'm saying, depending on where, in a situation which you could be at your car, wherever it is, you basically leave, like I'm suggesting you do, it doesn't work. kids don't care. They don't think that you. They don't see that you're a fool, really confident as much as you know to do it. They don't care. They're not impressed. They don't go anywhere. Okay. So now it's step two. So now what needs to happen is you got to go actually get them. So which can happen in a couple ways. A can happen in if you physically have to go pick them up and carry them. If they're small enough, then you go and you have to pick them up. If they're big enough for where they would outrun you. Yeah, good luck. Eventually you get to the car. What happens then, that's really the key. In other words, at that moment is, you know, you're stuck. I don't have any guard. I find when I leave the comments, they come with me. If they're young enough, I can pick them up. But whatever, eventually these will come, right? The key is what happens then. In other words, what's the natural consequence? In other words, that moment is lost. Like, they didn't listen. You can't fight with them, you can't run after them, but eventually you'll get them into the car. Eventually. However, whatever you need to do that. The question now, what's the natural consequence of a child who went to a park and didn't leave when it was time to leave?
They
can't go next time, which may or may not work for you, because if it's an only child, or there's a baby, so like, what are you going to say? Well, we'll go to the park, but we can't.
Right.
We're sitting at home, so that may or may not work. It may work. That would work if it's going to be
a routine that you always
correct. If it's a routine, then it would for sure work.
And what we had a play date, so we supposed to make up the best friend in the class. We had a play date with so and so in the park. I was
texting
your mother, and I was saying you can't go.
Suddenly, so that's the time, in other words, in which the moment, it's not about the moment. In the same way as when my kids in the playroom at dinner time, they didn't come. It didn't work. Right, so that would be a way, as long as you set it in the right way. Say, this is where things get different between like punishments and consequences. It would have to be like children who cooperate get lollipops. In this house, children who cooperate get lollipops. It's a fine line between a punishment and a consequence, but you're trying to fit that in. But it would only be if you'd ask for it, or it would be hard. Again, that wouldn't be a natural thing in which if you get to the car and you say, I'm not giving you a lollipop because you didn't quit. That comes up as like a punishment, and it's probably not very effective. The difficulty is in the parenting then is coming up with something creative, either the next day you're not going to the park, or something at night in which the general rule in that type of example is as follows. You didn't listen. What am I concerned about letting you do if you show that you don't listen? Like if children get older, for example, you know, they want to go with their friends, whatever, to play dates. I'm like, why can't you go there? Because I'm so afraid that, you know, so-and-so's mommy is going to ask you to leave, and, you know, today you show me you really were having trouble listening, so I'm nervous to send you. I'll listen. I know, tomorrow night I'm sure you will. When you show me tomorrow, like, you know, listen, I'll be happy to send you. But I put it in your hands, you just, as soon as there's cooperation. So it's not the getting in the car today as much as how to figure out what's the response for the fact that they didn't get in the car. Which is not always so easy. You know, some examples are, you know, you can't have it the next time. But no, that's the difficulty of being creative with it. Yeah. Yeah.
So, like, you find out that they have a larger hand. Like, if they might all come to our table, but they don't stand. Like, you can't control them, but they really don't. Like, they're hitting each other at the Kiddush table, you know. Some examples from other families. You know?
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to know, like, would it be right, kids who don't get on the table get grape juice? Like, how is that not a bribe? Or, like, you told before, kids that stand at the table can get seconds on grape juice, or kids that, you know, like, how is
it's not a bribe because that's what you're doing right now. That's, we're making kiddush and we're giving out grape juice. What is it that you need to do to get grape juice? Anyone who's at the table gets grape juice.
So they're standing there, but not standing there.
Whatever the rule is. In other words, whatever the procedure is for the home. You know, children who sit without hitting their siblings get grape juice. It's a small adjustment, and so it's for them to be able to get. As long as you don't get into it, they do hit, and then they say, oh, I'll be good. If then you hit, then that week there's no grape juice. Unless you then give them some other option to make up for it, which is also fine. But it can't be then that you say, I won't do it again. Really what I did is normally I do over two sessions and I crammed it into one, which is why I didn't get there. I apologize about that. But then it's probably like 9:45, I'm sorry. I had all these examples that I wanted to do just to really go through how this would look. I hope it was clear. Any other quick questions before I let you go?
Yes.
technical kid medicine?
Yeah, that's
real. Yeah, so medicine is really the stupid part because there is a natural conflict because of something that they have to do if it's something that they want. So if there's ever a place where you use bribes, it's in, you know, patient medicine. I mean, that's sort of seriously. In other words, like, there's certain things, again, this is where we live as parents and we have to be normal and be true to ourselves while we're trying to address the way that we fought for last week and trying to get them to understand consequences. And like, well, what do? I have a kid who's got strep throat. I need him to take this medicine, and they don't like it. So what am I going to do? Okay, so, you know, that's where, you know, you take your bribe. Okay, so fine. So we'll get, if you get into soda with their medicine, maybe otherwise would never do. So fine, you know, again, be normal. As I just were trying, as I said, this gives me a structure. So if you'd be in my house, you'd say, wait a minute, I'm not rigid as a person, and therefore my parenting isn't rigid, but there's a structure that I'm working off of. When a child speaking without their head, whoa, that sounded funny. I don't listen to children speak that way. You're touching it, I'm just, if there's a behavior that's no good, it's scooping in, picking up a small child movement, you come back with every, you know, you got it. A 10-year-old in the house, sometimes, you know, 10-year-olds, they're everyone's cooped up in the same house, they annoy their siblings. Their younger siblings, older siblings think it's their job to annoy younger siblings. Response is, you need to leave the playroom right now. You come back when you can do that. It's up to you. You're 10 years old, and I'm basically doing the same thing that I did to a 4-year-old, except the 4-year-old, I picked up the 10-year-old, I say, come back when you're leaving here. They got the message. Now they won't come back because they're like, can you go over there? That's fine. I don't care because you're not annoying your siblings to go to your room and hang out. But you can't be here if that's the way that you're going to be. When you're ready, you come back. I'd like to be in their hands to decide because the lesson is learned and it changed their behavior when they do that. I hope it's 9:45. I'm sorry I went so late. I hope I tried to panic too much. I hope it came out clear. But I'm a big fan of... A big fan of this, and I didn't even get to everything. I did not even come close. Yeah. All right, have a great night.
Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to torahmediaatlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.